And the day's top story. The overall COVID-19 situation in India is stabilizing. Niti Aayog member VK Paul announced today this is India reported its smallest daily increase in coronavirus infections in nearly 3 weeks. India has reported 3,26,098 new coronavirus cases and 3,890 deaths in the last 24 hours. This is as per the Union Health Ministry.
Overall, the situation is stabilizing, and we hope and we will work toward ensuring further stabilization and a rapid decline of this pandemic.
The government, in an unusual Saturday press conference, in its effort to send a positive message, assured people that COVID situation in the country is stabilizing as many states are reporting a decrease in cases.
Pichle almost 4 se 5 dinon mein hum dekhte hain कि हमारे रिकवर्ड केसेस एक्टिव केसेस से बढ़कर आ रहे हैं और हमारी एवरेज वीकली रिकवरी में भी 11% इम्प्रूवमेंट हुआ है. देश की पॉजिटिविटी पिछले 5 दिनों से 20% से कम पाई जा रही है. अगर हम डेटा को एनालाइज करें तो पाते हैं कि एक प्लेटोइंग और एक डिक्रीजिंग ट्रेंड केसेस में नोट किया जा रहा है.
दो केसेस इन द लास्ट 24 आवर्स हैव रिड्यूस्ड बाय 5% एंड डेथ्स बाय 3%. The cause of concern is the huge dip in vaccination. Vaccination has gone down by 46% in the last 24 hours, reflecting acute shortage of vaccines on the ground. States are now increasingly focusing on vaccinating the above 45 age group on priority with the available vaccines. The increased duration between the first and the second dose of Covishield vaccine to 12 to 16 weeks came into effect from Saturday in Haryana.
Interestingly, what we found here is that 2 days back, the central government had revised the time duration between the two doses of Covishield vaccine. So that has come into effect from today in the state of Haryana. Here it has been clearly pasted at the windows of the vaccination center here. It clearly says that the duration between the first and second dose has been increased to 12 to 16 weeks. Also, very importantly, appointments will not be possible if the time period after the first dose is less than 84 days. So this is a clear directive that has been issued by the Haryana state government.
Meanwhile, in Bengaluru, a 64-year-old woman was issued the certificate for the second dose of vaccine without being vaccinated.
I just opened the COVID portal and I could clearly see that the vaccination certificate is available for my mom. And the same time and the slot what I have actually booked before, that is May 5th, 1 to 4, has been vaccinated and vaccinated by Shilpa Shri.
आप ये कह रहे हैं कि बगैर उनको वैक्सीन दिए हुए ही उनका सर्टिफिकेट इशू कर दिया गया.
Yes, sir, yes.
While underlining that vaccine is the basic weapon to conquer the pandemic, Dr. Randeep Guleria, director of AIIMS in New Delhi, stressed that those with comorbidities and elderly should be vaccinated first and the larger population can be vaccinated in a graded manner. He also assured that more vaccines will be available in about 2 months.
Vaccine that we are having currently will continue to be in short supply at least till June or July, I think, till July, because in July we will have a large number of manufacturers now opening new plants,
right,
and coming out with more and more doses. So till that time, it's going to be really difficult to say that we'll have enough vaccine.
While the cases seem to be plateauing in many states, the government says it's still early trend and not a time to let our guards down.
Much more can be done, should be done, will be done.
NNDTV Bureau Report.
So does this mean that the second wave has peaked? Cases and fatalities are stabilizing. Delhi's positive cases as a share of tests has fallen to 11%. The chief minister told news briefing from more than 30%. The overall rate of positive cases per test have dipped to 19.8 this week from 21.9 last week. So does this mean that the second wave has peaked? Well, to answer this question on Left, Right and Center tonight, Dr. Rakesh Mishra, director of the Center for Cellular and Microbiology at Hyderabad, and Professor Maninder Agarwal, a professor of mathematics at IIT Kanpur and a member of the National COVID-19 Super Modeling Committee. Dr. Mishra, to you first, your reaction to these numbers, these figures released by the government today. Many in the public, you know, I'm sure would want to think positive, as the government puts it, to, you know, see the glasses half full. Does this mean that the second wave has peaked?
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly, we have been seeing in the newspaper that it was stabilizing, and I assume that we have kept the number of tests on and quality the same, so that relative there is a stabilization. And as Dr. Agarwal will explain, it was kind of predicted also that it will peak at certain time with certain numbers. So maybe we are getting those numbers right. But I would just immediately add that we by no means indicate that we can take any relief or respite, although we can take a psychological kind of advantage from this. But the efforts that are on must be continued, or even more vigorous efforts should be made to test and track, because these things can change if even a little bit of relaxation is exercised. So while this is very encouraging, and as we just heard, it is stabilizing, we shouldn't say that we have got on top of the wave and we are going to the other side. I think we should wait a few more days, and in the meantime, continue our efforts.
You're saying cautiousness must continue, but Dr. Mishra, I'm still asking, this is a positive sign you're saying, but can we be sure, can the slow growth also be reflecting that test rates are at their lowest since May? Many are just not testing. Many are saying that if you have symptoms, just assume that you are COVID positive. You cannot even get a test in many cases for 2 days.
So I assume that those things are taken into consideration, and that is based on that government is making these numbers in public. So I think we should take it as a positive. But as I'm saying, that we have to ensure that we are testing and testing in quality, so that we have the correct numbers, and several days we have to keep watching that this thing is really stabilizing and we are not deviating too much from this. So those small variations, some stage testing less, some stage testing more, and those kinds of will get averaged out. But let's have a 7-day average for a few days and then see how.
Professor Agarwal, when the COVID cases came down in January and February and the vaccine rollout had started, many were feeling, as some are feeling tonight, that the pandemic is over, at least this wave is over. But the virus really hadn't gone away. It was just evolving. It was mutating. So what do you make of these numbers right now? And does India really have the data to do modeling on this?
Yeah, as Dr. Mishra says, one should take these numbers a little cautiously and as well as optimistically, that certainly things are looking better now than they were 10 days, 12 days ago. We track 7-day averages of all the numbers, whether it is tests or active cases or new cases, because that there are a lot of weekly variations depending on day of the week. And in those measures, something very interesting that came out was that yesterday was the first time after 22nd of February that the average active cases actually declined from the previous day. So that is something certainly encouraging. And we have been keeping a track of the average tests also. We don't see a very significant difference over time in them. So I don't expect testing to play any significant role in impact on these numbers.
Okay. But Professor, my question again, you're saying you take an average of 7 days. But do we have the data? Are you satisfied with the data you have that you can access over these 7 days for you to study? ICMR has information on tests being undertaken. You can find out the proportion of reinfections, timeline of reinfections. But the data is there, but there are some reports that it needs to be made available. Many scientists of India had written to the Prime Minister saying that, you know, science should prevail, data should be made available.
Absolutely. We can certainly do more with more data. So that is something that we will always keep requesting, that if we can get more data, it will help us in better modeling efforts.
No, is it
at the same time, I just want to point out one thing, that this very simple daily infection and recovery data that we are getting consistently.
Okay.
This has, we have found that it has some really strong patterns which indicate
that it is reflecting the reality in a reasonably accurate way. There is a scaling factor, that the reality is a scaling factor times larger than what we see in the reported numbers. But the trends are the same. That is, if reported cases are going up, then actual reality is also going up. If the reported cases are coming down, then the actual numbers are also coming down.
Okay, and what about the fact that now, you know, of course, the worry has been that the wave is moving from big cities into rural areas. And Dr. Mishra, in rural areas, do we have the kind of testing facilities?
Certainly.
Has that been factored in?
No, rural areas certainly have a testing facility, and that should be factored. And I think when the data is analyzed, those things have to be put into kept in account. And the point that you raised is also valid in another way also, that India is a large country and the waves and those things might not coincide and be synchronous in each place. So in different, like Maharashtra, probably certainly we see a significant change now happening in a rural better direction, and many other cities it might not reach at that point. So there is a lot of granularity that we have to bring in to make we don't have to necessarily decide a national wave of this kind of thing. We have to look more local and address problem in that way. Somewhere it may be rising, so we have to put extra care. And like, for example, in West Bengal, the lockdown is being done, and so I think it's a very, very good thing, so that we can stop those things. Similarly, I don't have immediate solution, because in villages even problem is of different kind. Although these are smaller cities and all, but it's vast, and lots of communication has to go, and it has to work at the village level. Once people understand, they will take care of this thing, but they have to be told that little bit of fever or cough can be dangerous, so we have to keep what care. So lots of communication, lots of thing has to go, and we have to work at the grassroots level for these things. It's a different issue compared to big cities where we can do curfew, and those you can't have curfew in the village. You have to have different strategy for that.
All right. Lastly, quickly, Professor, then based on your modeling, what would you say? Is there going to be a third wave, and if so, when?
Well, it entirely depends on what percentage of population we can get vaccinated. There is a natural immunity induced by the second wave in a large fraction of population, and that's going to last for a few months, certainly. So we have time, let's say, to by the end of this year. If we can scale up the vaccination properly and vaccinate, let's say, half the population, I think we should be okay.
All right. So we have to scale up the vaccination. We have to be, our response has to be data-driven. We have to follow evidence-based science. That is essential. I think we can all agree on that tonight. Thank you, Professor. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you both for joining us on Left, Right and Center. Meanwhile, a rise in cases of the coronavirus variant dominant in India could pose a serious disruption to Britain's reopening plans. Prime Minister Boris Johnson has warned, and amidst concerns over this rapidly transmissible variant from India, UK's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has reduced the gap between two doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine from 12 to 8 weeks for those above the age of 50. Well, joining us now tonight on the Left, Right and Centre is Professor Peter Piot. He's the director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Peter Piot needs no introduction. He's one of the discoverers of the Ebola virus in 1976. He has spent his career fighting infectious diseases. He's currently a coronavirus advisor to the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. Professor Piot, thank you so much for your time tonight. England, where you are, is preparing to majorly ease up on restrictions from Monday. But now the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, is saying that he's anxious about a rise in the UK of this coronavirus variant that has been first identified in India. This variant is becoming more prevalent ahead of this next big easing of lockdown restrictions. How worrying is this?
Well, indeed, Sarah, it is true that the evolution of the epidemic here is gone into the right direction compared to January, when the mortality and so was as bad as and even worse than what you have in India at the moment. And We have now over 50% of adults who are vaccinated, at least with one injection. So it's really good development. However, you know, what's going on here illustrates that we can never be complacent. And certainly, it's far too early to declare victory. Just as the so-called British variant, B117, is very common in parts of India, we now have in some pockets in England, particularly around Manchester, Bolton, and so, we have now rapidly growing infections with this variant, B16172. And that's very worrisome, and particularly since it looks like the variant is more transmissible. However, you know, the way to handle this is to have very targeted, lots of testing, and also redoubling vaccination efforts in those populations that are most vulnerable. But it's we had here a perfect storm, just like you have, you know, with, on the one hand, just before Christmas, behaviors, mass gatherings, people partying pre-Christmas, and then a new variant. And so no time for complacency. That's the big message here.
All right. And Professor, what as the world watches and reads about India and what we're going through right now, in the middle of this pandemic, there is a humanitarian crisis arising from this pandemic. There's going to be inequality of vaccine distribution, and that could divide the world along a new bias, a new, you know, splitting of the world among haves and have-nots. Globally, what response does India need to see from the world? Because the world is a global world right now, given our size, given our population, given the nature of vaccines, simply that if everyone doesn't have one, the virus by default is still infectious and it continues to make more variants.
Well, it's definitely true that this pandemic will not be over until it's over everywhere. Yes. So it's in the interest of every country that all other countries are, you know, bringing this epidemic under control. And we are indeed already in a world of high inequality in terms of vaccine coverage, which is not only important in terms of saving lives, but also to save economies. Countries that will have high vaccine coverage will, you know, be able to relaunch the economy and so on. So what can be done? First of all, I should say that each country, and certainly India, fast country, it's only Indians who can solve the problem and bring it under control. However, well, the least the world could do is, for example, that India, which is the largest producer of vaccines in the world in general, that there are no export restrictions. I mean, we had the news from the US to say that they're lifting, you know, patents on vaccines. I think that is not so relevant at all. What would be been far more helpful is that there was a lift on the ban of exporting raw materials, ingredients, plastics, and so on, that Indian manufacturers of vaccines desperately need to produce enough vaccines. And so that is really what I see as a top priority. And I think that vaccinating, as we just heard, as many people as possible should be absolutely the top priority, in addition to caring for people with oxygen, remdesivir, and other drugs. So vaccinate dense urban populations and get as many people a first injection as possible, because that's going to provide at least a decent protection.
So basically, and given the fact that we are the world's largest manufacturer of vaccines, it is the world's interest that India overcomes the second wave right now, because then we will be able to do that, play that role of producing vaccines for the entire world. Is that correct? Is that what I understood?
Absolutely. So this is in the interest of India in the first place, of course, to save the citizens. And also because you're such a vast country, but it's in the interest of the world, because if India can't produce enough vaccines to export, continents like Africa won't have any vaccines. So the bedrock of vaccines for COVAX, which is an initiative brought by Gavi and CEPI, that to provide vaccines to low-income countries, depends really on Indian manufacturers. So right. I think the lesson is also that we've learned now over and over again is don't declare victory too early. I just heard that the possible good news that there is a decline in new infections, but one that has to be confirmed. And we all know that the official figures are a gross underestimate. And that's not just the case in India, because not everybody is tested who has it. And not every death is recorded. But also, if you relax too early, as was the case in India, as we've done in the UK, as happened in the US, and so on, means that we're in for trouble with deaths, millions of deaths as a consequence. So continue the vaccination efforts, speed up vaccination manufacturing, but also make sure that, the so-called non-pharmaceutical interventions, wearing masks, distancing, and so on, that they're also fully respected.
All right. So the takeaways are vaccinate, and we're all in this together globally. Lastly, Professor, what are the lessons India can learn from the global experience, from England's experience, let's say, because you've just emerged triumphant from the second wave?
Yeah, the first lesson is indeed that don't take anything for granted. When you see even the slightest rise of infections, you have to act. Don't wait to act until people are dying, when the hospitals are full, when intensive care units can no longer see and receive the people that need intensive care. So act early. No time to lose is really a slogan, I would say, and no complacent. And then also, the fact that India, as the largest vaccine producer in the world, has one of the lowest vaccination rates. That's something that is beyond my comprehension, and that should be also a top priority now for the whole world. But all that requires very strong leadership at all levels. I've been many times to India, and every time I'm impressed how big the country is. So it has to be dealt with at each level, everywhere, but vaccinate, and then think through if your amount of supply of vaccines is limited, think through where can you make the biggest difference. And that is usually
identify
where
the
there are
spots.
Dense populations, so to prevent spillover to the rest of
All
the
right.
country.
Professor Peter Pierre, thank you so much for your time. Director of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, thank you for joining us on Left, Right and Center tonight.
Pleasure.
That's it.
Thank you.
On the show, have a good night.